History at Hand, revision at your fingertips. How could someone like Hitler become Chancellor of a civilized and democratic country? In this podcast, we explore how Hitler was able to exploit the political and economic weaknesses of the Weimar Republic to win greater and greater support for his ideas in the early 1930s. We'll focus on what Hitler's aims were, the effects of the Munich Putsch, how the Depression helped the Nazis, the role of violence and propaganda, and how the political system helped Hitler into power as Chancellor on the 30th of January 1933. It is important to remember that this question is about how Hitler becomes Chancellor, not how he becomes dictator. That will be considered in a further podcast, which takes the story up to August 1934, when he becomes the Führer on the death of Hindenburg. Hitler was born in Austria in 1889. In his early formative years, he wanted to become an artist, failed to get into the Vienna Academy. After that, he spent many years in the Austrian capital. Watching as other people were gaining success, he became a vagrant, living in hostels. He fled to Germany just before the outbreak of war in order to avoid Austrian military service. When war was declared, he signed up for service in the German army. During his 4 years of fighting, Hitler became a corporal. He also distinguished himself for bravery, winning the Iron Cross 2 times. The army gave him a sense of purpose and a sense of meaning. The camaraderie and the nationalist spirit infused him with a great passion for his country. When the armistice was declared in November 1918, Hitler was in hospital recovering from a gas attack. He could not believe that the German military which he had served would have capitulated. He believed that the German army had been stabbed in the back by Jews, communists, socialists, people who he had no regard or respect for. He joined the German Workers' Party in 1919, and in 1920 it was renamed the National Socialist German Workers' Party, the NSDAP. He became its charismatic new leader. In 1921, the Nazi Party, as it became known, formed its own military wing, the SA, the Sturmabteilung. These brown shirts formed a protection around Hitler and were able to attack political opponents. Many of them were ex-army officers and Freikorps. Others were young men seeking a way out of the problems that they'd faced after the war. Hitler's beliefs were laid out in the 1920 program of the Nazi Party and later expounded in his 1924 book Mein Kampf, My Struggle, which he wrote in prison following the Munich Putsch. He believed in the superiority of the German race and that Germany therefore should have special privileges. Hitler believed that German purity of blood was essential for the success of the future German nation. He believed that Germany deserved more land in Europe, Lebensraum, living space in the East. Of course, he was violently opposed to the Treaty of Versailles and swore to avenge all of its terms. Hitler was no believer in democracy. He saw it as weak-willed. Germany, he argued, would need a strong leader, someone who could steer them and not compromise, as democratic politicians always had to. Hitler wanted to restore German pride by building up the strength of her army. Hitler was also violently anti-communist and believed that the Soviet Union was the biggest danger to the German people. He also believed in anti-Semitism, a belief that the Jews were a corrupting influence in German and other Western societies. He held Jews responsible for Germany's failure in the First World War. He held them responsible for his failure to get into art school. The Jew was a convenient scapegoat which Hitler could use to explain all Germany's ills away. In times of crisis, Hitler had a ready audience in the German people to hear these sorts of diatribes. By giving the German people someone else to blame, it made the Germans more united behind a single leader. The economic crisis of 1923 made Hitler ready to strike. He believed that there was popular will and support for an overthrow of the German government. So, in November 1923, he launched the Munich Putsch. On the 8th of November, Hitler and 600 stormtroopers entered the Löwenbräukeller, a beer hall in Munich. Hitler declared himself there to be the President of Germany. The following day, Hitler and his supporters seized control of important positions in the city of Munich. Hitler expected the police and the army to join him, and then he would be able to march on Berlin. As the Nazis marched, the police and the army opened fire on them, they'd remained loyal to the government. In total, 16 Nazis and 3 policemen were killed. Hitler, with his supporters like Erich Ludendorff, one of the great generals of the First World War, were arrested. The putsch was a failure, but it taught Hitler some valuable lessons. If he were to get into power, he would have to use the hated democratic system rather than launch a revolution against it. Hitler was put on trial in 1924 for attempting the overthrow of the government. One would expect him to be treated very harshly. After all, he had committed treason, and his actions had resulted in the deaths of many people. Hitler, though, used the courtroom as his stage, in which he launched a vituperative attack on the Weimar Republic. He refused to accept its legitimacy, as the November criminals, those who'd stabbed the German Empire in the back. His tirades made him a popular name across the whole of Germany. Newspapers were keen to report the outcomes of the trial. The judge, an old imperialist himself, had sympathy with Hitler's position and sentenced him to only 5 years, of which he only managed to serve 9 months in Landsberg prison, more a hotel than a place of correction. It was here he was able to write his book, Mein Kampf. As the German economy recovered during the Stresemann years, the Nazis seemed to lose ground. There was no longer such a clamour for the extremist policies. It seemed like democracy was working in the interests of the German people. The Nazis won 32 seats in the elections of May 1924. But by 1928, their share of the vote had gone down and they had only 12 seats. Hitler's message had failed to resonate with the vast majority of the German population. Yet still, Hitler was able to consolidate his position and his party. Many smaller groups within German society were willing to flock to the Nazis. Membership rose from 20,000 to over 100,000 by 1928. The SA continued to impress many with its parades, marches, flags and banners. Joseph Goebbels had been appointed to be in charge of propaganda, very effectively. Many also saw the Nazis as an antidote to communism. Others saw the Nazis as a party who'd stick up for Germans and Germany against the likes of the Treaty of Versailles, international communism, and the Jewish conspiracy, or so they imagined. Hitler's opportunity came, though, when Germany spiraled into depression after the Wall Street crash. As the United States called in her loans, German industries no longer could afford to keep going. Thousands and then millions of workers were laid off across the land. By 1933, there were 6 million Germans unemployed. That was a third of the entire labour force. Those who had lost their jobs were in despair. Those who still had them feared for the future, feared revolution, the loss of their property and civil war. The Nazis played on people's fear of communism. They presented themselves as the only real alternative to a complete breakdown of German values and society. They made promises, vague promises, to the German people. Arbeit und Brot, work and bread, was a common sight on their campaign posters. As we said, in 1928, the Nazis got only 12 seats in the Reichstag. By 1930, they'd gone up to 107 seats, and in July 1932, they'd won 230 seats and were the largest single party in the Reichstag. Hitler also gained 13 million votes in the presidential election of that year. He was defeated by Hindenburg, but still, it was an impressive result for a party which, only a few years earlier, had been almost non-existent. Propaganda helped the Nazis to consolidate this success. Under Joseph Goebbels, the Nazis presented a modern and effective campaigning machine. They were able to use newspapers, radio, aeroplane flights, mass rallies, marches, parades, flags, posters, in order to get their message across to the German people. But the biggest asset of all for the Nazi Party was Adolf Hitler. He was a very persuasive and charismatic public speaker. He was able to stir and rouse in crowds fits of imagination and emotion which other people simply couldn't do. The Nazis could present themselves as a forward-thinking, dynamic, vigorous party who were able to overcome Germany's problems. Look how well they themselves were organized. Surely they could do the same for Germany, was how the message went. As support for the Nazis grew, so did its membership, and in particular, membership of the SA. The Brown Shirts, remember, were the military wing of the party, and they were able to go on all these parades to show a sense of discipline and a sense of unity behind Adolf Hitler. They were also able to attack and use violence against political opponents, to intimidate voters, to intimidate communists and socialists and Jews. The Nazis were only able to do all of this, though, because they were given funding. Many big businessmen believed that communism was in danger of taking over, that revolution was round the corner, and with it the loss of their property and their wealth. The Nazis seemed to be the only people capable of standing up to this communist threat, and therefore, by providing ample funding for the party was then able to use it spectacularly in getting its message across. In the summer of 1932, Hitler demanded that he should be made Chancellor. After all, the Nazis were now the largest party in the Reichstag. Hindenburg, though, didn't trust Hitler. He saw him as just a little corporal who could not be trusted. Hindenburg did much to undermine the democratic process in Germany. Under his chancellors in the 1930s, Brüning, and then von Papen and von Schleicher, he was forced to carry out Article 48 of the Weimar Constitution. This meant that he was given emergency powers, by which he was able to pass laws by decree. This essentially meant that the will of the German electorate was ignored. In elections in November 1932, the Nazis actually lost support and went down from 230 to 196 seats. It seemed as if the Nazis had peaked. For many, the party was now in a state of internal crisis. It was at this point that Hindenburg offered an opportunity. The president had failed to create a workable government under von Papen, a close advisor to him, and then under the leader of the army, von Schleicher. Both were dismissed in the hope that a government could be formed which would have the support of the Reichstag. Only if the Nazis came on board would the Reichstag be able to support any government. So, in January 1933, Hitler was invited to become Chancellor by the President. The Vice-Chancellor would be von Papen, and only three members of the Nazi Party would sit in the cabinet. Von Papen and Hindenburg believed that Hitler could be dominated. Essentially, he would be their puppet, and would enable democratic government to be restored. They underestimated Hitler. It was a catastrophic mistake for humanity, not just in Germany, but beyond. As we have seen, there are a range of factors which need to be considered when thinking about how Hitler becomes Chancellor. When we think about Hitler's ideas, we see that Hitler was willing to make promises to the people to restore Germany's fortunes after the period of crisis caused by the Great Depression. It was not that his message had fundamentally changed, but now the German people were much more willing to listen. We also need to consider the role played by Joseph Goebbels and propaganda. We need to think about the role played by the fear of communism and the use of the SA in order to try and overcome the dangers on the streets of Germany. We do also need to consider how Hitler was helped into power by Hindenburg and von Papen in particular, but also by the big businessmen willing to fund the party in order to avoid a communist revolution. Your essay questions on how Hitler becomes Chancellor can be very general, or they can be specific to one particular point. Was it down to propaganda? Was it down to the fear of revolution? Was it down to being helped into power? In those questions, you've got to consider a whole range of different features. You can't just focus on one. That's denying you half the marks. So it's absolutely vital that when you consider the whole issue of how Hitler becomes Chancellor, you've got to think about a whole variety of reasons. Hitler's aims, the Depression, propaganda, and being helped into power. Goodbye and good luck.